The Athletic.
Before you get started on this episode, listeners, we've got a small favour to ask. We want to know what you think of our podcast, so we've got a short survey where you can tell us exactly what you like and what we can do better at theathleticsurvey.smsinc.co.uk. As a thank you, you'll be entered into a prize draw to win one of three £100 Amazon shopping vouchers. Now, I'm afraid we're only after the feedback from UK-based listeners at this stage, and you won't actually be able to enter the draw if you're not in the UK, so don't waste your time. But if you are in England, Scotland, Wales or Northern Ireland, then do head on over to theathleticsurvey.smsinc.co.uk. That's theathleticsurvey.smsinc.co.uk. Thank you, and on with the show.
Totally Football Show, European edition. Today, Barcelona announcing Xavi, like getting a shell suit and a personalised number plate. Serie A announcing Xavi as the former Ballon d'Or joins Genoa. We hear about both those stories, how the goal of the decade very nearly happened, who the man they call Pep Genesio is, what's happening to Atletico Madrid and other things, including some absolutely crucial World Cup qualifiers. All of that in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Listener, hello. It's Tuesday the 9th of November. Actually, it's not. Production secret. This is Monday the 8th of November still. Greetings from the past. This was us recording with James Horncastle, Julian Laurent, Rafael Honigstein, Alvaro Romeo. You know the drill. Everyone good? Everyone pumped for the international weekend? It's a big one.
Scared, I would say.
Yeah. Spain 2 points behind Sweden in their qualifying group. Italy, whoa, delicate game for them. Germany, whoa, only about...
No Barella as well. Wow. No Verratti.
All right, Jules, riffing on everyone else's pain.
Yes, it's okay. Okay. We play Kazakhstan.
All right. We'll talk about the internationals later on. Right now, I want to kick off with some moments of the weekend with Paddy Power. Alvaro.
Difficult this time, but I will go for Atletico winning 3-1 away, Barcelona winning 3-0 away, and both Celta and Valencia managed to come back and draw those games. And those two moments are for me the moment of the week.
Incredible. And they say they don't score much in La Liga. They certainly did this weekend. What about you, Rafa?
Oh, James, it was Milos Pantovic's goal to give Bochum a 2-0 win. 97th minute, empty net. And he curled it in from way, 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 way inside his own half. Lovely celebrations at the Ruhrstadion as well. Beautiful goal, beautiful moment for Bochum.
That's even later than your ones, Alvaro. I've just seen it. It's pretty amazing, Rafa. It's like one of those empty net goals in hockey, you know, when they pull the keeper and they just fire the puck from the other end of the ice, but a bit more skillful. Yeah, because it's a bit further out. Lovely stuff. Horn dog.
Well, it's the return, isn't it, Jimbo, of Andriy Shevchenko on the day of the Milan derby. Who comes back to Serie A but one of that rivalry's great protagonists? Not to be coach of Milan, not to be coach of Inter, but to be coach of the oldest team in Italy, Genoa.
Woof. Lovely. I want to hear more about that, please. But not until we've got a bit of Jules and his moment of the weekend.
So weekend, I will pick the incredible winner Saint-Etienne because they have not won this season yet. They have no fans because they still play behind closed doors, or the fans were outside protesting against the manager and the owners. And they 2-0 down with 15 minutes to go against Clermont. And somehow they scored three goals, two of them between the 92nd and the 94th minute to get their first win of the season. Pretty incredible.
What is it with late goals this weekend? I guess we'll be finding out. Magnificent. All right, let's begin, though, with Xavi.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend. Brought to you by Paddy Power. If one leg of your 4+-fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet on all football leagues and all markets. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1-5 per leg. Online exclusive, no shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Much excitement Monday as Barcelona unveiled their new manager, Xavi, because Eddie Howe was already taken. In front of about 25,000 fans at the Camp Nou. That's about as many as they get for a game these days, of course. Alvaro, thoughts on this move?
I think it's very good. I think it's brilliant. I don't know if this is gonna work or not, but it's better than stumbling around the phone contacts, trying to find any available manager with different styles, managers that they don't resemble each other. At least when you get Xavi, you know what you're getting. He's a devoted Barcelona man. Xavi, as a footballer, he was probably the biggest devotee of Barcelona style, and he was always discussing tactical aspects with everyone else, Guardiola, Luis Aragonés, Vicente del Bosque, Luis Enrique. So, you know, I think that Barcelona did well in going back to their roots. It's pointless to have La Masia, to have a system in which you teach your players to play in a certain way, and then have a manager that doesn't believe in that, or have a manager that doesn't do the job of promoting players and making them play in a certain way. So I think that Xavi's appointment, at least, is an appointment of a president and a club that now has a direction. I don't know if this is going to work, because in 2008 it worked very well with Guardiola, but times are different, the squad is different, and what Barcelona did in 2008, as Michael Cox said in The Athletic, was much more revolutionary than what Xavi wants to do now, because many clubs try to play like Barcelona. But yeah, I think that this is the right appointment.
So he has the club DNA, that's how you'd put it, Alvaro, yeah? There's been a lot of talk about how he's going to, because he was a great midfielder, he's going to turn other midfielders like Gavi and Pedri and De Jong into kind of the new dream team. But I mean, I've heard similar talk about other neophyte managers when they came in, because they had a great pass as, say, midfielders, and it didn't necessarily work out. How much wishful thinking do you think is there right now about Xavi at Barca?
Well, probably from what you were mentioning, Lampard and Pirlo are two examples that come to my mind of former midfielders, right, that didn't get the best of some other midfielders. I think that Xavi is capable. Whether he will do it or not, it will depend on his persuasion skills, which I believe that Xavi, at least, he's a huge believer in what he's saying, so whatever he's going to transmit to the players, he's going to transmit it with belief. But maybe the midfield line, James, is the thing that Barcelona fans should be less worried about, because Gavi and Nico and Pedri are youngsters, but they seem to be very fit for top-flight football, and who knows, maybe they are future stars, but they look very good so far. Frenkie de Jong, this is the player that Xavi will have to work more on, because I believe that he wants to play in a certain way and Xavi wants to play in a different one. Frenkie de Jong is more mobile. And I would say that Barcelona's main problem right now is that it's vulnerable, and I wouldn't blame the midfield necessarily. I think that in defense they are terrible, and when it comes to attacking, they don't score enough goals, also because they've got many injuries. So the biggest jobs for me are going to be to make sure that Barcelona is already, or it's again, robust when it comes to scoring and defending.
All right, four games without a win. Threw away, as you mentioned, a three-goal lead at Celta Vigo at the weekend, which also saw that game. Ansu Fati going off at halftime injured. Sergio Aguero's out for the foreseeable future. Any news on Kun?
Aguero, he's going to be at least 3 months out, and then they are going to address his situation. Ansu Fati is going to be out for about 6 weeks now, which is a hell of a problem as well for Barcelona. Let's don't forget, and I'm not comparing Ansu Fati with Messi, but when Lionel Messi became that super player was exactly when he stopped getting injured. So circa 2008, when Guardiola took over Barcelona, Ansu Fati is getting too many injuries. This one is a muscular one, fortunately for him, not in the knee. I mean, there are around 11 players in the sidelines for Barcelona. So Xavi, in the first day, he's going to train only with 6 players, because many of them are in international duty, many of them are in the sidelines. So, you know, there is an amount of micromanagement that you can do with Mingueza, I guess, or with Luke de Jong. I mean, you cannot be working with them the whole day. So it is a difficult job, James. Back to Xavi for a second. He's taking over in the middle of November. This is a depleted squad. This is a squad that lost around 45 to 50 goals in summer, because Griezmann and Messi left. And I think that, in my opinion, this is going to be the most difficult thing to recover for Xavi, the ability to score from Barcelona. Barcelona being prolific up front. So yeah, it's a difficult job, and there are so many players in the sidelines that I do know that Xavi as well wants to change a little bit of the medical staff as well, because the physical condition of the players is not good, and many players are relying on, this happens a lot in football, but in Barcelona it's happening a lot as well, many players are relying on their own physios or in some other doctors aside from the club doctors just to address their injuries.
Okay. Barcelona currently 11 points from the top of the Liga table and 6 from the top 4. Very good. We'll get more on La Liga. What was a pretty exciting weekend very soon. But next up, woof, we're off to San Siro.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Colpo di testa, rete! Ha pareggiato il Milan! Tomori! Esattamente, al 17esimo minuto, nel corso del primo tempo.
What? The sound there of Milan equalizing. Takeo Tomori doing the celebrating. He didn't actually score the goal, but artistic license. And that in a 1-1 draw. Sunday night at San Siro. Whoa. Milan against Inter. Big game this, James Horncastle, for one Hakan Çalhanoğlu.
Yes, Çalhanoğlu, who left Milan at the end of last season on a free transfer. He could have gone wherever he liked, James. But you know what? He's just fine in Milan, the city of Milan. So he decided to take his talents to Inter instead. And yes, I think he really wanted to stick it to Milan. I have no idea why, given they put a very good offer on the table for him to extend his contract. He thought he was worth more on the back of all those assists that he creates from, you know, corner kicks and free kicks and that sort of thing. And he scored a penalty in this game. He's not the designated penalty taker. That is Lautaro Martinez. We'll get to that in a moment. He won this penalty. He said, "I'm taking it in front of the Curva Sud." So in front of where all the Milan ultras are standing, and he drilled it down the middle, and then he did the "I can hear you" gesture, just as Zlatan had done all those years ago, and Ronaldo as well, the original Ronaldo, when when he played for Milan,
because he shares something after
great
that goal
start.
with Ronaldo.
Great start. He's only the fourth player to score on his debut with one of the.
What? Go on, Jules. Go on.
Of one of the Milan team,
yes.
After having played for the other Milan teams,
exactly.
With Ronaldo, Ibra, Crespo, and that's it, and him.
That's it. That's all there is. Incredible.
I heard that on a great show on Sunday night.
Oh, you're too
kind. It would be so great if listeners could watch this, because Jules has just been like holding up a teacup as though he's like a little tea party England.
This
incredible.
Is where we are. We're family here. You know,
a cup of tea with a very specific temperature. That's not where the game didn't end there, though, did it, James?
No, it didn't, because as you mentioned, it looked like Fikayo Tomori inexplicably dropped by Gareth Southgate from his England squad, even though Tomori's been playing Champions League football. Let's not mention where Milan are in the group in the Champions League, but he has been playing Champions League football. And he thought he'd scored in this derby, James. He thought he was going to have a choreography immortalising him in future derbies, just as there's one of Mark Haitley. And instead, no, it was an own goal. But boy, did Tomori make us think that it was his goal. That was an incredible celebration.
Yeah. So that was Milan equalising. And then Inter, who, to be fair, were the dominant side for most of this game, won themselves another pen. And this time the designated penalty taker stepped up. Lautaro Martinez, he needed a goal. He hadn't scored in 6. But Tata Rusano had other ideas. What a story for Tata Rusano.
Yes, Tata Rusano, who is the standing goalkeeper, 35. Mike Mannion, who replaced Gigi Donnarumma, has done such a good job. Has been out after having surgery on his wrist. But they haven't really missed him, do I say? I think there are other layers to Mannion's game, which makes Milan a better side. But Tata Rusano hasn't made any mistakes, really, since he's come. He saves this penalty. And Milan, I thought, second half of the first half, played some good football. Then Inter ended it with those chances. Barella had that shot cleared off the line. And then at the start of the second half, again, it looked like Çalhanoğlu was going to score. He had a volley which flashed across the goal. But I think you have to give credit to Milan's players and Pioli for the changes that he made, which were much better than Inzaghi's changes. And in the final 20 minutes, with Rebic and Salamakers on the pitch, it definitely looked like Milan were the more likely to come away with a win in this game. So at the end of it, you had Pioli saying, "My glass is half full." And Inzaghi was saying, "My glass is half empty."
All right. Nice. Okay. Milan stay unbeaten, and that's the half full business. And Inter stay 7 points behind them, and I guess that's the glass half empty business. The good news for Milan is that they don't lose ground on Napoli either. Same is true for the Nerazzurri, of course, because Napoli only drew as well a little bit earlier on Sunday, wearing their special Maradona jerseys. I think someone at Kappa's got Photoshop installed. They've got, it's kind of Maradona's face with a fingerprint and just like all over in a big square in front of the jersey. Anyway,
but
that's not...
James, yeah. it's not Kappa. This is the incredible thing. It's Emporio Armani.
What? All right, then.
Yes. You know, so they've got no excuse.
No excuse. Really, but it's just, some people might like it. It, I mean, for me, it's different.
Not for me, Clive.
Yeah. Not for me, Claudio. But anyway, this game here... I mean, the key thing that I want to mention, and there's probably other points too, is the fact that once again, Cholito scored. Giovanni Simeone, that's his seventh goal in four.
Yeah, he was going to be my moment of the week, but he has been for the last 2 weeks. So remember when he scored those four goals against Lazio, it was because he'd watched Rocky. Then presumably he watched Rocky 2. Before the Juventus game. And now I imagine he's been watching Rocky 3, which is the, what, Club of Lang? Is that the one? You Ain't So Tough. So, I mean, he's still got a few Rocky films to go, so
which
there's
no
reason
to doubt. Which is
the
one where they go to Russia? Is that 4 or 5?
That's 4.
4, so we got that. And then 5 as well, no? Oh, but then also, you got Creed. Can he start watching Creed?
Yeah, I think he can start watching Creed. So there's maybe room for another 5 games where he can keep scoring. So.
Right.
Insane. Just remarkable.
It is, isn't it? Anyway, as you were in the top three in Serie A, behind them, Atalanta moving into fourth and Lazio into fifth, past Roma, who lost again, this time at relegation strugglers Venezia. Ethan Ampadu setting up the winner for the Venetians, the Lagunas, TM James Horncastle, who look well worth their win. For Jose, the waters are rising. At 1-7. Next up, they'll be facing Genoa, who are also, like Venezia, just outside the bottom three, but have a brand new manager after they drew 2-2 last Friday away at Empoli. They binned off Davide Ballardini for the fourth time in his history and brought in James Andriy Shevchenko, as you were mentioning, for his first job in club management. Everyone's excited about this, I hope. Rafa, are you excited?
Very excited.
Right, me too. Why are you excited?
Why wouldn't I be excited?
It's just fun, isn't it? He's such a nice guy that we had the pleasure of his company one Sunday night in a little Bijou TV show we used to do a long time ago. And he was, for a Ballon d'Or winner, an all-time legend, and, you know, he was an absolute sweetheart, wasn't he?
He was very sweet, but also a little bit shy, which I found surprising.
Well,
maybe he was just in awe of you and your...
I think we're quite an intimidating group.
TV career, James.
He was wondering, is he going to close down this channel as well? Yeah. If I'm on TV with James Richardson, what kind of channel am I on? These thoughts were passing through his head. Right. Anyway, it is very exciting. He's never managed a club, but of course he's managed Ukraine all the way to the Euros, as everyone's mentioned. And that's not the end of the project that's being put together at 7-7 Partners' new club, Genoa, is it, James?
No. What's the rest of the project, James?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you mentioned last week Luis Campos may be coming in.
Oh, I think they are looking for a sporting director at the moment. I mean, I think for Ballardini, who has had 14 seasons in Serie A, never started and finished one of those 14 seasons, it was a little bit unlucky. Drawn too many games this season after the miracle job he did to keep Genoa up last year. And then they basically got rid of all their best players. Mattia Perin, the goalkeeper, Scamacca, Zajic, Strootman, players like that. So I think that goes to show the kind of job that Shev has got on his hands.
Mm.
Shomurodov, remember, he went to Roma so that Jose couldn't play him, even though he scored at the weekend. So it is a project that is still embryonic. They've got their manager now. I think they want to put the rest of the structure in place, and I think it's something that they're still talking to get the kind of best advice on how they should go about running the oldest club in Italy.
All right. Well, if you are excited about Shevchenko turning up on the Grifoni bench, you'll be even keener to know that the debut game for Sheva against his old mentor, I think that's fair to say, Jose Mourinho. Such a bond between the two back in Chelsea days.
Pure love. Pure
love. Pure love. Will be live on BT Sports Sunday the 21st. That's if Sheva turns up instead of going to play golf as he normally does during football matches. Right, Jose? Anyway, very good. Next up, let's hear about the Bundesliga.
So, Mr. Bielsa, what's troubling you?
Well, doctor, mi traduttore.
Well, doctor, my translator is constantly undermining me. Last week, I told everyone to take five and get an ice cream, but he told them to run laps and practice their shooting.
Sometimes it seems they don't know what they're doing, but with Paddy Power, you always know you're getting top draw rewards. If one leg of your bet builder on a football game lets you down, get your money back as a free bet. Paddy Power.
Pre-match bet builder bets only. Max free bet £10 per day. Excludes enhanced match odds. Min 4 plus legs. Min odds 1/5 per leg. Online exclusive. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Big game Saturday night in the East, Raphael Honigstein, as Leipzig took on Borussia Dortmund and beat them 2-1. Oh my word, it's that man Christoph Nkunku again.
Yes, he was fantastic once more. He scored a goal, he made a goal for Yusuf Paulsen, and he very nearly scored the goal of the year, the decade, the century.
Jetzt vielleicht noch mal ein Kuku auf Forsberg, immer noch ein Kuku, noch eine Drehung, Kuku. Kommt zum Schuss, Ball an den Posten. Und jetzt vielleicht noch mal Paulsen, der hat den Ball, legt ihn rein auf Forsberg. Oh, wir bringen den Abschluss nicht.
Jungs,
was für Chancen.
He did a double Zidane pirouette. So one pirouette, another one, then took a shot. It bounced off the post agonizingly. But he was amazing. Leipzig were very good, probably their best game of the season so far. You know, Jesse Marsch had been under a lot of pressure going into the game, with results being very uneven. And Leipzig playing, relative to their potential, some really pretty average stuff. But they turned it on. They were super sharp. Their pressing was on point. Dortmund's build-up play completely collapsed. And then they played some football for a change, which I think made the real difference. Once they got the ball, they didn't just go bang, 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 try to be as quick vertical as possible, but actually took their time, softened them up, and then slipped them one.
Hmm. Dortmund having a bit of a major injury crisis at the moment, but all the same, this terrific result for Jesse Marsch and one of a series of good performances back-to-back with the 2-2 draw against Paris Saint-Germain in the Champions League, which admittedly did see their hopes of continuing in the competition ended, but still a good result. They're unbeaten in five now, so onwards and upwards.
It was a hugely important result for him because the doubts were beginning to creep in, and I think there might still be some doubts within the club, within the dressing room. Not about him as a person, I think they all really appreciate him, but I think after Nagelsmann, there was bound to be a bit of a drop-off in terms of the coaching expertise, and I think there was a danger that he was being seen as just coming up a little bit short. But I think he's made some smart changes. Publicly, he's talked up the fact that, you know, the players are all behind him and they follow his vision. But actually, if you look at the substance of it, he changed the system back to the system that the players are much happier with, which is the three at the back. And I don't know how, you know, relevant that would be going forward. But certainly in this game particularly, they seem to just play a bit slower because it's quite interesting looking at the number of passes that they play per sequence on average, and it's about a third lower than any top team in the other league. So they string about three passes together before the ball gets lost on average. And the good sides to have four and a half, five. It might not sound a lot, but if you, you know, multiply that by hundreds and hundreds, it amounts to having a third less control in attack with the ball than really good sides. And I think that's something they need to work on to find that extra level. But you were right mentioning Dortmund because they were pretty ropey. Yes, injuries. Yes, system that didn't really suit them. And Marco Rosa changed it again at half time. But the lack of application and that sort of lack of just being ready for what was a big fight and a very exciting game so many times has happened and happened again. And you know, for a team that on paper should be Bayern's challengers or at least push them hard, it looks again as if there won't be even a position to do that this season. So very disappointing.
Mm. Leipzig climbed to within 1 point now of the top four in the Champions League places. At the top, Bayern 4 points clear now. They took on Freiburg, where as usual they were breaking records and ending records. No, because they handed Freiburg their first defeat of the season. Lovely to see Nagelsmann returning to some of the more, I would say, Strozo wardrobe decisions. He was sporting a lilac hoodie and puffer jacket ensemble.
Yeah, but still relatively restrained.
Would you say?
Standards, if you think back of the Champions League outfits that he used to wear.
I haven't seen this pitch. This sounds like he's in a Mo Money Mo Problems video. It is not
nearly as flash as James made it sound. I think it's actually quite restrained.
It's the kind of thing he might do the housework in, I think.
Or, yeah, possibly. I mean, as you know, he's been doing a lot of work at home recently.
In the kitchen.
Work from home.
Right.
But he was back on the touchline in the Bundesliga again. And Bayern, you know, had a hard time against Freiburg. Freiburg really pushed them. Freiburg played with courage. They were not afraid to press them really high. They created lots of problems. They created a few chances as well. Manuel Neuer was in great form. But ultimately, sort of Bayern accepted the challenge, and of course their superior quality shone through at the end. But it was a really good game and a lot more even, a lot more balanced and on the edge than people would have expected.
Mm, okay, Robert Lewandowski scoring his 60th goal in 50 games for Bayern and Poland this calendar year. That's pretty extraordinary. Also this calendar year, Bayern are now on 100 Bundesliga goals. The record for a calendar year was set back in 1977 by Cologne.
Who?
Cologne.
Who?
It's this club again, for goodness sake. Cologne.
You bottled it like some Cologne.
Hey.
How do you say it, Rafa? Köln.
What?
Köln.
Köln.
Köln. Them, anyway. They got 101 goals, and let's hope that Bayern break that. They only need one more goal, two, so we don't have to mention them again. Good. Hey, Wolfsburg are back in the top four. Florian Kohfeldt has had 3 wins from 3, just to say. Since he took over from Mark van Bommel. Excellent stuff.
Yeah, really, I don't want to say surprising, but quite a turn of events. I mean, the guy who basically took Bremen down gets appointed by a top four side and makes them a top four side once again. I mean, they've been always good defensively, but they seem to have that balance back that certainly was lacking big time under Mark van Bommel.
Excellent.
Yeah, should be a good one, Kohfeldt.
Very good. All right, next up, Spain, con muchos goles.
Listeners, we've got a very small favour to ask. We want to make sure we're making the very best football podcasts out there, so we need to know what you like and what we can do better. We've prepared a survey over at theathleticsurvey.smsinc.co.uk, and if you complete it, you'll be entered into a prize draw to win one of 3 £100 Amazon shopping vouchers. Now, we're only after the feedback from UK listeners at this stage, and you can only win those Amazon shopping vouchers if you live in England, Scotland, Wales or Northern Ireland. So if that applies to you, then please head on over to theathleticsurvey.smsinc.co.uk. That's theathleticsurvey.smsinc.co.uk. Thanks.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. And with Paddy Power, if something doesn't go quite according to plan, you can get your money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. And that's got to be good news for all you Man United fans out there, eh? Pre-match bet builders only. Get your stake back as a free bet. Minimum 4 plus legs. Max free bet £10. Excludes enhanced match odds. T's and C's apply. It's over 18s only. And please gamble responsibly.
Goals, listener. Even the Spanish are scoring them these days. 12 in two games at the weekend. One was that extraordinary Barcelona match at Celta Vigo. If you missed it, Fati made it 1-0, Busquets made it 2-0, Memphis made it 3-0, and they were cruising. Then what happened, Alvaro?
Celta came back, and they deserve to come back. You know what happens in La Liga lately, that the small clubs or the mid-sized clubs, they know that the top teams are vulnerable. This wouldn't have happened 3, 4, 5 years ago. And Xavi talked about it in the press conference when he was presented, that the team needed to recover the urgency, the need to win games. And I think that this is going to key for Barcelona because, as I said before, they are the kind of team that are vulnerable, the kind of team that they don't have immunity to anything, not from the tactical aspect, not from the technical aspect either. They don't know how to defend themselves with the ball, which is something that they did very well in the past. Mm-hmm. So Barcelona showcased all that against Celta, and as soon as Celta sniffed a little bit that Barcelona wasn't up to the challenge in that game, they went for them, and they ended up getting the equalizer, one of the goals scored by Iago Aspas, who seems to be incombustible, by the way, because he's still scoring goals. He got two goals, one of them in one of his favorite fashions, just with the space to run. And the other goal was scored by another veteran player too, Nolito. As I said, it was a very important point for Celta, because this is a team that has struggled at the beginning of the season. And it was, again, another bad game for Barcelona, Pyrrhic in many ways, a Pyrrhic point, because they also lost Ansu Fati for the next couple of months. And this is not looking good for the young Spanish player.
Mm, but that's okay because they've got Xavi arriving. Meanwhile, Atletico Madrid followed up their 2-0 loss at Liverpool midweek with a 3-3 draw at Valencia. Now, they were 3-1 up in the 91st minute, and then Hugo Duro, who got his name from a website, I think, came on in the 85th minute and proceeded to get a post-91st minute brace. Extraordinary. Against Atletico Madrid.
I'm sure that Hugo Duro was more delighted than anybody else, because I believe that he's a Real Madrid supporter, a former Real Madrid Academy player as well. This didn't happen to Atletico de Madrid, but what a week for them. I mean, in the last two games, they have conceded 5 goals. We all saw what happened against Liverpool in the second half. Liverpool didn't try very hard to score any more goals, but they could have done it. Atletico was reduced to 10 men, and they didn't lay a glove against them. And against Valencia, it looked like Atletico had it all sorted, winning 3-1. But if you see what happened between the second goal and the third goal, both of them, by the way, I think that they could have been defended better, because Valencia players managed to have shooting positions from inside the box too easily. But if you see what happened between the second goal and the third goal of Valencia, you wouldn't believe it. I mean, I think that the ball lasted in Atletico Madrid's feet for about 5 or 6 seconds before Valencia got the ball back after, you know, kicking off from the halfway line. And I think that that shows that Atletico is a team that doesn't know how to defend themselves. They have lost that armor plate characteristic that defined this team as well. And it doesn't work nor with two defenders, neither with three. And Diego Simeone, after the game, he said that he takes all the responsibility. Mm. But there are some players in there that they weren't up to the challenge. Jimenez, one of them, for not being able to throw the offside line. Higher, Kondogbia, for losing a ball that he shouldn't have lost. And generally speaking, the intensity of the team wasn't enough.
Do you think this is because Simeone has tried to shift the balance of the team into playing a more open type of football? Or is it possible that the players, after a certain number of seasons of working under Diego, have basically just kind of lost interest in his approach?
No, I just think that in the past, Atletico de Madrid had defenders with a high rank in world football. Mm. And now they just don't. I mean, I think it's all about that. They are late for the challenges. They are clumsy in the box. They react later than their opponents. They never get to the ball first. And rather than a physical thing, I believe that it's about the quality of the team. They have lost Godin. They had in the past very good defenders. And now the ones who are leading the defensive line, Jimenez and Savic, they are not that great. I think that that's one thing. And whoever is playing alongside them, Hermoso or Felipe, they are not always excelling at their job. So if this is a team that relies a lot on the defensive structure and you don't have like quality centre-backs in your team, you're going to suffer. that's for sure. And then I believe that also the holding midfielder, whoever plays in there, is not doing a great job either. Kondogbia this time wasn't playing great. Koke himself cannot handle the midfield alone. And they are missing a lot the likes of Marcos Llorente, for example, players who actually, when the game gets a little bit like that, a little bit extreme, they are capable of compensating the team's deficiencies and running more than the opponent.
They're now 5 points off the top of the table. In first place, currently in La Liga, it's Real Sociedad, who won at Osasuna. Real Madrid behind them beat Rayo Vallecano with Benzema and Falcao both on the score sheet. Falcao is scoring every 67 minutes for Rayo. It's the best goal per minute ratio in La Liga. And also up there, Sevilla, who won the derby with Betis 2-0. The second one, an own goal from our friend Hector Bellerin on his Sevillano derby debut. So Real Sociedad 1 point clear, having played a game more of Real Madrid and Sevilla. Here's a curiosity, Alvaro. Almost 90% of Real Sociedad's goals in La Liga this season have come in the second half. That's the highest percentage of any team in the top five European leagues. Incredible.
It is very impressive. Yeah, I didn't know that. I didn't know that, but well, that explains you that this team has the resilience to go at it and never stop believing. Against Osasuna, they won with a goal of Merino, the 71st minute. That was the goal that broke the deadlock. And then a second goal, of course, from Adnan Januzaj from a penalty spot. After a beautiful solo run by the former Manchester United player, I have to say that keeping Adnan Januzaj is going to be one of the tough tasks of Real Sociedad because his contract expires in 2022. And he's been good for Real Sociedad, very good. I think that at the end he found at San Sebastian the perfect ecosystem to play his best football, and a manager that believed in him. And Mikel Merino scored the goal. You know, you will remember this man because he played for Borussia Dortmund for no more than a year, I believe. Then he went to Newcastle. He did very well in there, I believe. And Imanol, the manager of Real Sociedad, defined him as the best player of La Liga. Of course, he's talking about his own player. He's going to be a bit biased as well. I'm sure that he wants to booster the player's confidence. But it is true that he's a hell of a midfielder.
Okay. Do you think, Alvaro, that the title race is now down to these three, Real Sociedad, Real Madrid and Sevilla?
No, I believe that this is going to be tremendously unpredictable. Last season, when there were only five games to go, we had still four teams involved in the title race. And I believe that this season is going to resemble that one in the same parameters. I think Real Sociedad could get in there. I don't think that any other club should be there, but five teams for the title race is already something very nice. But I still give a little bit the upper hand to Real Madrid. Don't ask me why, but I believe that Imanol Guacil may say that Mikel Merino is the best player in La Liga, but the most decisive player in La Liga is Karim Benzema, probably. But the most decisive player in La Liga right now is Vinicius Junior. So with those two up front, Real Madrid is doing marvels, and against in the Champions League or against Rayo Vallecano the other day, both of them proved that they can score any time and they synchronize each other so well. I think that Real Madrid has the upper hand for this season, but the title race is going to be quite nice.
Excellent news. All right, next up, let's hear about another close title race. France.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
Ligue 1. Hey everyone, I've got a funny feeling that this might be Paris Saint-Germain's year. They went and won 3-2 this weekend at Bordeaux, while their challengers, well, Nice lost 1-0 at Montpellier. Lyon lost 4-1 at Rennes. Marseille had a goalless draw with Metz, and Lille drew with Angers. So it's Lens who've gone back into second place after their 4-0 win over Troyes. But they're 10 points behind Paris Saint-Germain, so that's that. Hey, but Lens, though, how good is Kalimuendo, Jules?
He's very good. He's
Where's he from?
PSG. is how he's born and bred. Of course, thank you, James, for reminding everyone. He's a pure product of the PSG Academy. He was already there on loan last season, scored 6 goals. And then when he saw that he was not going to play much again this year in Paris, he wanted another move. So they've loaned him again back at Lens, where he feels really at home, and you could see the way he plays. It's such a great team. We've said it before on the show, but Frank Heis has got them playing really well. They've got Jonathan Klose on the right wing back, who we can make all the joke we want about Santa Klose and all of that, because he's really that good. And I don't know why Deschamps doesn't call him up for the national team, because I think, especially now that France play with wing backs, he's better than Dubois, better than Pavard, and certainly could, I think, deserves a chance with the national team. But they've been great to watch. This was easy for them against Troyes, but even before that, they've been a joy to watch this year so far, and totally deserve to be second place behind PSG as well.
Magnificent. All right. Well, it is close, actually. They're only 1 point ahead of Nice and Marseille. At the other end of the table, Jules, Saint-Étienne got their first win of the season.
Yes, James, incredible. We said it a bit at the moment of the weekend. Against all odds, they had not won this season at all. They had no fans at the Geoffroy Guichard Stadium because of it was their game behind closed doors. The fan protested outside the ground before against the owner and Claude Puel, the manager. There was still a toxic atmosphere, even if there was no one there. Clermont scored 2 goals to be 2-0 up and cruising, really cruising. And then Saint-Étienne got one with 15 minutes to go and then starting pushing and then scored 2 goals on set pieces, 2 corners, 92nd, 94th minute to win an incredible game that could be potentially for them a turning point, although they're still not very good. They still have Claude Puel as a manager and they're still in the bottom three. But at least that win is a big breath of fresh air for them.
Clermont, though, I mean, to concede one goal from a set piece in time added on is, you know, is embarrassing, but awkward, two of them, yeah, one after the other.
Exactly. And considering their team that has been really good scoring goals in the last few minutes of games so far this season. Mm. So it's not really them you expected to be on the receiving end then, but Saint-Étienne were very clinical in the way they took those, not even chances, those two set pieces, and they've been very good at it.
All right. Other talking points from Ligue 1 include Lille getting that massive win at Sevilla midweek in the Champions League, but also Paris Saint-Germain and their big win at Bordeaux. Kylian Mbappe setting up the first 2 goals, both scored by Neymar, then Mbappe getting the third. Was this Paris Saint-Germain looking a bit more like, you know, it?
It was a little bit better for all the criticism that I've given Pochettino recently. Mm. This was better. I mean, not the start. They never start well anyway. Not the end where they conceded those 2 goals and I think took the eyes off the game a little bit, and he made some dubious changes anyway. But in between, I thought they were good collectively, which we have too rarely seen so far this season. So on that level, there was a bit of improvement, I would say. Some really good movement, good passing of the ball as well. So that was good. It's good to see Neymar back at that level. There's a very famous Brazilian singer who lost her lives in a plane crash at the weekend. So he paid tributes to her. Rafinha, the Leeds player, did the same tributes as well to her after he scored at the weekend in the Premier League as well. So that was quite emotional, but it was good to see Neymar and the connection between Neymar and Mbappe, especially after the closure gates, if you remember a few weeks ago. It's good to see them linking up again like the way they did. And James, Lyon as well, as you said, having their bottom wiped by Rennes on Sunday night in our big game. They conceded 4, they lost 4-1, they should have conceded 8 easily. And the funny thing is, obviously, the Rennes manager is Bruno Genesio, the former Lyon manager, who we all call Pep Genesio in France, because one day he had this amazing touch in a post-match interview to compare himself with Pep Guardiola, saying, oh, Pep Guardiola, you know, does this. And Bruno Genesio does this. So since then, we've always called him Pep Genesio. And in fairness to Pep Genesio, it looked really good. It was really good on Sunday against his former club as well. So well done, Pep Genesio.
Well done.
I think Ligue 1 has the best nicknames. It really does.
Okay, let's hear
them. It's brilliant.
Fashion Week. Let's just break it down there for anyone who wants to Google images. Fashion Week is?
Yeah, that's Michel, the Spanish coach, who could dress well, but not manage when he was in Marseille, for sure. Mm.
not a manager, perhaps similarly, but a senior football figure at PSG, Leonardo, Jules.
Yeah, thumbs up, you know, of course. That's how we call it, because every time you see him, whether he comes to talk to you, says hello, or he's even far away, night or day, the thumb will always be up.
Okay, what about Pochettino? Does he have a nickname?
I don't think so, no.
What he doesn't want to be called is the Argentine guy.
For now he's
you don't
safe.
Want that.
For now he's safe on that point.
Okay, Jorge Sampaoli?
Jorge... I think we call him a locals just because of the Bielsa Pavale, because they're not actually very, they're not too similar, but a little bit. But I'll come up next week, I'll come up with another one. But Pep Genizio is right up there.
Right. What about La Liga and Serie A? They're not, I'm trying to think of the, what were the, any classic nicknames there?
I remember one, but he's not a very famous guy. Lucas Alcaraz, he managed in La Liga for over 200 games. He's very defensive, and they call him Lucas Alcatraz.
Ah, yeah, lock them up. Like it. Next up, it's an international weekend and a particularly important-looking one. Details next.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Internationals, final group stage matches. Only the top teams go through, but which of the nations we focus on will finish top? Who's everybody got? Germany, Rafa, 8 points clear. You are of Romania, nothing to worry about there. Basically, what's this? What are these games going to be at? Are there any kind of bit of fine-tunings that Hansi Flick's going to be doing?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much fine-tuning you can really make or do against Liechtenstein and Armenia. I mean, they were so thoroughly outplayed, both these sides, when they met first time round. Though Liechtenstein, results-wise, made it look fairly competitive. They were only beaten 2-0. But Armenia, it was 6-0. I think it's limited insight that you can really gather from this. But yeah, I mean, Flick, I think, just wants to keep it going. I think even though the opposition is pretty below average, really, Germans, by and large, have responded well to him taking over. Enjoy watching this team play again. So just to keep that bit of feel factor going into that long break of, 5 months before they meet again. So yeah, that's really the name of the game for Germany. Not much at stake as such.
Well, Germany, all right then. France, 3 points clear of Ukraine at the top of their group, Jules. Yeah?
Yeah, Kazakhstan at home. And I think a win or maybe even a draw could be enough to qualify. And then we have Finland away, I think.
Right. Okay. Well, that'd be all right, no? It's not like the dramatic scenarios that are currently facing both Italy and Spain, who recently faced each other in the Nations League. Of course, this time around, Italy are going to be taking on Switzerland on Friday. Italy and Switzerland are level at the top of their group. Italy have then got Northern Ireland away next week, and Switzerland hosts Bulgaria. So this is an absolutely key game. And as Jules was mentioning, to his enormous regret, Italy are going to be missing probably some key players, right, James Horncastle?
Yeah, it looks like they'll be missing Barella, who came off in the derby. Also, Lorenzo Pellegrini, who's been player of the year, I think, so far in Serie A. But then again, they were missing players when they faced Switzerland in the group stages of the Euros. Verratti, for example, who won't be around, he was missing for that game. Remember, it was the game of Locatelli. Locatelli scored that incredible brace. Immobile's been in fine form of late, obviously, since surpassing Silvio Piola as the all-time top scorer in Lazio's history. But it is a big game, James, as you mentioned. They were hoping to have 100% capacity at the Stadio Olimpico to get the crowd really roaring for them. But to be honest, the atmosphere was great when it was last played there. Italy kind of paying for that post-Euros hangover where they drew with Switzerland in Switzerland and drew with Bulgaria as well. And then there are some bad memories around Northern Ireland, aren't they? Because going to Belfast.
Battle of Belfast.
Yes. Yeah. When they failed to qualify for the World Cup.
Yeah, they went there. So the referee couldn't make it. He's the director of the Budapest Opera, and he couldn't make it for some reason. So they had a standby referee. Oh, that's right. He was fog-bound, and then the standby referee was going to come from Liverpool by ferry, but he couldn't make it in time. So in the end, they had to use a local referee and just call it a friendly. And it was, I believe, a draw which would have seen Italy through, but it was by now only a friendly. So they said they had to come back and replay in January. So Italy went back to Belfast in January. I think when was this before the 1958? So it must be, what, 57? And, it didn't go well for them. They picked a whole bunch of South American oriundi, kind of naturalised players, and both sides kicked lumps out of each other's, I think. And, Italy crashed out. They missed out on qualifying. So it's a game that's gone down in infamy. And it's looming again, crikey. All right. Anyway, that's the situation then with Italy, who are taking on Switzerland on Friday. That's a game to keep an eye on. Spain, though, Alvaro, Spain, currently 2 points behind Sweden in their group. Spain have got to go away to Greece and then host the Swedes. Good Lord, that's going to be dramatic.
I really think so. And Greece can still qualify for the World Cup. If not as first, they can make it to the playoffs. Sweden is topping the group. And basically, if Spain wants to make sure that they are in the World Cup, they have to win the two games, beating Greece in Greece and beating Sweden in Spain. Mm. The problem is that this Spain is capable of dominating against top sides, but then normally they don't score many goals, and that's why it's so difficult for them to win. But every time they play against the top side, they give a very good image. But when they play against the bad side, they dominate as well, but they still can't score many goals. So people get upset. And I think that Sweden, Greece, but especially the Swedes, they're going to defend a lot. And this is going to be quite tough for Spain. I envisage that. And there are key players missing here. Let's not forget that Ferran Torres is out. Ansu Fati is out now. Oyarzabal, Jeremy Pino, Gerard Moreno, the best scorer Spain has currently. Eric García. So many players missing, and so many of them up front, that's going to do this challenge difficult for Spain. It's a critical situation.
But it's okay because you've got RDT.
He's a good player.
Who has RDT on his shirt behind his back? I mean, Raúl de Tomás is a legend.
And honestly, and that hairstyle, it resembles so much of Petja Mijatovic. He's a very distinct player, very peculiar.
It's like that's a character from Star Wars, you know, in your team. It's amazing. Yeah. You cannot lose.
Well, maybe we cannot lose with RDT. I really hope not, but the situation again is a bit critical. And RDT is one of the best scorers we have in the squad right now. So that tells you a little bit how needed is Spain. Álvaro Morata, fortunately, is there. Dani Olmo, who is still 95%, 90%, he's going to be one of the key players again. He has played only 4 games this season. So yeah, again, it is going to be quite difficult for Spain. And if they don't qualify for the World Cup, it will be the first time since 1974 that they don't do it.
Wow. Okay.
And the first time since 1992 that they are not in a top tournament.
Of course, all the second place sides will go into a playoff. 4 spaces in Qatar. Automatic qualifying is only the top in each group. Crikey. Wow.
But the playoff is quite tricky, James, because it's a one-legged playoff.
Ooh.
So it's a life or death matter from the very beginning. Wow. In the semifinals and in the final as well.
That's going to be so exciting. When are they going to play those, Alvaro?
That comes in March, I think.
Wow. But this week already looks pretty dramatic. So let me just flag up that we'll be previewing all of the weekend's key matches in this Thursday's The Totally Football Show. So do join us for that, listener. Meantime, that's it for this Euro edition. Many thanks to Herr Honigstein, Monsieur Laurence, Senor Romeo, and Mr. Horncastle, and producer Charlie too, and you listener, wherever you're from, wherever you're going. I hope you'll keep it totally, and we'll see you soon.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.